E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers in my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
Welcome to the House of Cinema podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon. With me today, my wonderful co-host, Clara Curtis. And in the house today, a discussion on Abigail, the latest horror movie from Radio Silence. Clara, before we begin, how are you? How are things?
Oh, man, things are good. An epic high is that I saw People's Joker last week, and I'm still thinking about it.
So is that, I mean, I saw People's Joker at a festival last year, so I haven't been really following the release for the People's Joker, but I know a lot more people have been seeing it. It's not like a wide release in like AMCs everywhere, but it has a pretty big wide release across the nation, right?
Yeah, it's more like independent theaters. It's similar to Hundreds of Beavers and like what they're doing, I'm pretty sure, where it's like, it's around, it's just not going to be, it's not going to be like in your AMC or your Regal. But like the number of cities it's showing in is pretty high, and it's a good spread so far. And they're adding more this week.
Very cool.
So if anyone wants to see the movie, I'm not being paid for this, by the way. I just really, I really love the People's Joker.
No one has paid us for the People's Joker.
I just really, really want people to see the People's Joker. So everyone should go see it. And you can check their website, thepeoplesjoker.com, to see it when they're coming near you, because they keep updating the website with more locations. So everyone should do that.
Are they going to be able to release that movie on VOD? Do you know?
I don't. No, I think in theory, yeah, because I mean, they've qualified for, they were able to argue for fair use. So like they have fair use.
Got it. Okay.
So I think we're good on VOD. Like, I think it will probably get there eventually as well. I'm not sure. I think right now, like, they're really just focusing on like theatrical and like,
yeah, of course,
just trying to get people to see it in the theater, because it is especially like a very communal experience. Like, people are dressing up and like,
it's become a,
it's so cool. It's like, I don't know, it's fun. So I think right now they're focusing just on theatrical.
Yeah,
but I might
that
be
makes
wrong.
Sense.
Check the website, everyone.
I know Hundreds of Beavers is kind of transitioned to the VOD world. They're still pushing theatrical, but they're also like, we have VOD options now. I just didn't know, because notoriously, if people were listening don't know, the People's Joker had a very hard time just getting to the theaters, because it is, you know, it's a Joker movie, but it's not being made by Warner Brothers or anything like that. So it was quite the journey for them to get the movie even out. And so I was a little concerned, a little worried if the movie would make it to VOD. I hope it does. But if they argued fair use and they got their way with it, like they should have, then it sounds like they should be able to go VOD, which is exciting for people who can't reach or get to like an independent theater.
Yeah.
Cool. People's Joker.
Yeah. So that's been going on. An epic low is that I divorced my wife on Stardew Valley last night, and I feel really bad about it. I feel really
Why
bad
did you
about
do it. Then?
Well, I've been thinking about it for a lot, like a while. Like, I tweeted about it like at least a week ago. Like, I've been really thinking
what
about it.
What did she do wrong? What, it's just not working between you two?
No, God, I love her. It's Emily, for anyone who plays. They'll know what I mean. Emily is so sweet and she's so cool. But I just feel so guilty, because before I married her, she lived with her sister. And now her sister lives all alone. And I feel really bad about that.
Yeah, so but that's just the way life goes.
No, but I want them to live together again, because like they're sisters. And so I divorced Emily. And now I think I'm just going to like, now I think I'm going to be a little evil, and I'm just going to date everybody so I can get all the cutscenes. I'm in my evil
divorce
era. Do I
need to be playing Stardew Valley? What is going on? I didn't know this was the game that everybody was playing.
Oh, well, okay, so I've been playing Stardew since it came out in 2016. I'm a huge Stardew person, but it got this massive update, like, earlier this month, and it's a great update. It's a great game in general. Like, Concerned Ape is, like, a really good game designer and developer and coder, and, like, he's just, like, really cool about, like, incorporating a lot of really cool features. It's really fun. I feel like you'd like it because it's like obviously like a farming sim. But there's like
I thought it was just a farming sim.
No. There's like mines. I think you would lock in hard on the mines. I think you would love the mines. There's so many mines, and you can do fishing, which is fun. And like, obviously, I'm going through a divorce, so you can romance the villagers.
All right, Stardew Valley.
And they have co-op. So you could do co-op.
What?
And
that's, you do?
Mm-hmm. And you all share a farm and you share...
Like a throuple with other villagers?
No, you each have your own like house, but...
But that doesn't mean you can't have a throuple.
Oh, that's true. Maybe. Okay, that'd be kind of funny. You should look into that.
Coming soon. Wow.
But I think you would like that. And it's fun because when you do co-op, you all share like the same bank account. So like all your money is in one, so then you can be evil and like buy stuff when you're trying to save and like
that is funny. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna look into this then.
I think you should. I feel like you would honestly probably enjoy it.
Stardew Valley. I mean, I've always been aware of Stardew Valley, but I have noticed in the last month or so, like an uptick in the conversations about the game, and I was like, maybe just more people are playing it. Like I know it's like one of those things where. Almost like Animal Crossings, where anytime something changes or there's like a random wave of people playing it again. I was not aware of this big update. So it's exciting. Well,
yeah, huge update, free update. It's great.
So sorry to hear about your
divorce.
But
yeah, I'm divorced. Okay. Well, how are you?
I'm doing great. Today is Monday, the 22nd. As of today, I've already seen challengers. Many people will be seeing that tonight, including yourself.
Yep, I'm going.
Scale 1 to 10 excitement level?
Ooh, probably 10. Good 10. Good clean 10, yeah, definitely.
Fair. Yeah. I wrote my review in Letterboxd. I got people hyped. Hopefully they don't hate me if they hate it, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Excited to talk about you, or talk about that with you and Sydney once we have that episode next week. But yeah, I'm doing well. Saw challengers. Just been preparing for a little trip I might be taking in May that I will announce maybe later.
Interesting. I already know, but
you already know. Watching a lot of movies for the Patreon side of the podcast. We're watching a bunch of psychological horror movies over there. Been reading Twilight.
We're gonna do Twilight next week.
I'm pretty far in the book. I'm actually shocked how far I am in the book, but I feel like movie wise, I'm not far in the movie at all. Does that make sense?
No, totally. I get that for sure.
Okay. I think a lot more time was spent leading up to Bella and Edward's. I can't believe this is a conversation we're having right now.
I'm so happy.
A lot more time was spent in the book leading up to their kind of first romantic conversation than I expected.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So that was that was interesting. Just getting there was a journey. I'm like, oh, wow. We're like 14 chapters in and they're barely saying, like, you know, getting a little bit more intimate, but I feel like in the movie it goes by, I mean, it's a movie, obviously, right. It goes by a little bit quicker, but I'm just like shocked by the difference there. But we'll talk about that in the podcast if you're interested in hearing that conversation. Patreon. Anyways, let's move to Abigail. Before we start, Abigail, our normal disclaimer: this episode will contain spoilers. I need a spoiler sound on the sound pad. What do I use? It's not that bad of a warning, like a jackass, like warning. That kind of warning.
Like a siren.
Yeah, like
Chosen one!
Not only that counts.
That was even better because you started it and then stopped it and let it run.
We will have spoilers for this episode. So if you're looking for a conversation, spoiler free one. This will not be it. Skip it and come back after you watch the movie, which you should go watch the movie.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for the podcast episode. We both liked it.
Yeah.
Abigail, if you don't know, is a movie. Here's a summary according to IMDb.
Okay.
After a group of criminals kidnap the ballerina daughter of a powerful underworld figure, they retreat to an isolated mansion, unaware that they've locked inside with no normal little girl. The movie stars Melissa Barrera as Joey, Dan Stevens as Frank, Alicia Weir as the titular Abigail, Will Catlett as Rickles, Catherine Newton as Sammy, Kevin Durand as Peter, Angus Cloud as Dean in his last role ever, I believe. Tragic, very tragic. Giancarlo Esposito as Lambert and Matthew Good, remember what I said, spoilers earlier. I'm already jumping into them. This was on the wiki, but Matthew Good is Abigail's father. And if you know who Abigail's father is, then you can kind of deduce who Matthew Good is. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, the movie made $15.2 million worldwide on a budget of $28 million. My first question to you, Clara, do you think it passes 28 million? Do you think it hits the 50 mark?
I don't know. I feel like it has, I feel like it potentially has legs on it, but it's also tough because it's R-rated, so not everyone can get into it that would want to.
True.
And then, I mean, but Challengers is rated R too. Is that what's going on? I don't remember.
I would imagine it is, considering the things I saw. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know for sure, but there were, I saw things, and I'm going to say it is.
I never notice what the ratings are anymore. But that's coming out this weekend.
The product of getting old. Honestly, just ignore everything.
It doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't matter. We just go to the movie.
We can just go to stuff now. Crazy. So I don't know. Because I think, honestly, if Challengers isn't coming out this weekend, I feel like it has a higher chance. Because there's just not as much going on right now. But now I'm a little skeptical. What are you thinking? Do you think it will?
This is tough because horror movies, R-rated horror movies, making like $10-ish million domestically over the weekend, mm-hmm. and then kind of popping off in the following weeks has been common in like the mm-hmm. last couple of years. I think Talk to Me is a good example of a movie that did that. Mm-hmm. Word of mouth really spread like fire, and it made a decent amount of money domestically and a good amount of money total worldwide. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the word of mouth is actually there for Abigail right now. Like, I know that within our own personal film circles, people are liking it and enjoying mm-hmm. it and recommending it, but it doesn't seem to have that same like fire spreading word of mouth. And you know, it's only the opening weekend, and maybe that kind of grows over the week. But Challengers may kind of stifle that a bit. Mm-hmm. It is also rated R. It is, you know, not horror, but it is a sexy movie with movie stars, you know, mm-hmm. Zendaya. It's tough. I am concerned. I hope it does hit 50, but I would not be surprised if it tops out at like 30, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, because I'm glad you brought up Talk to Me, because that's a good one to compare it to in a way, because like, I definitely feel like a lot of people are seeing Abigail and like talking about it, but it's not the same level of like,
oh my God, go watch Abigail right now.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel like that. I think
it's
another
not like
example
that.
Is Barbarian. I think Barbarian made 10 million-ish opening weekend, and then that word of mouth really caught fire, and people were going out to see that the following weeks.
Do you hear? I'm going to open the door to something that I know you want to talk about. Do you think part of why that happened with Barbarian is because they hide so much of what's going on in that movie? And so people didn't know. And then when they come out, they are like, oh my God, it's crazy. Like, you have to go see it.
Honestly, and you're right completely. I have this point for later for us to talk about. I do to an extent believe that, you know, it's easier to sell a movie, or it's easier for a movie to catch that kind of viral fire when people are going like, oh my God, I did not expect that. You need to go watch it immediately.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's what really pushed Barbarian over that edge, where people were like, go watch it. Talk to Me didn't have that same kind of momentum. I mean, it had a lot of momentum, made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But that was more just kind of rooted in the fact that the movie was good.
And really good.
It was like scary. Like, people were talking about how scary it was and disturbing. Mm-hmm. And so like, they had a lot of things going for it. Not so much like a big reveal or twist.
Right.
I honestly do believe that if Abigail would have kind of kept a lot of this under wraps and went in as like, you know, told us it was like this, you know, five people in a house, stuck in this house, something's hunting them. Yeah, there's a possibility it would have a lot more excitement and buzz around it, because people are like, whoa, I did not expect that, you know, the little ballerina girl to be a vampire. That's so fucking weird. And I think that would have like really inspired a lot of people to go watch the movie. I know I would have been talking about it maybe in a more energetic and enthusiastic way, because I would have been really excited for people to kind of experience that.
Yeah, definitely. It's
Do you
interesting.
Think that?
I I think I do agree because it is now like my brain is like whirling and it's like they could have framed the marketing around, you know, it's a little bit of a subplot in this where like when the killing first starts, they think it's like Abigail's father's like infamous like hitman.
Yeah, Valdez.
And like, you know, it's a figure that has such like a legend around it that like he has a name and like all these different things. And so you could have easily pulled like those kind of clips, I think, for trailers and framed it in like a, oh my God, like a mob boss hitman almost is like coming for us. Like, this is so scary. Like,
and that's the craziest part to me is that,
yeah,
well said, because I think I agree with you completely. That subplot of the movie, which exists for the first, you know, 30-ish minutes as these mm-hmm. group of people are trying to figure out who is killing them in the house,
mm-hmm.
it seems like such a softball alley-oop, use whatever sports analogy you want to kind of use that as the red herring to market your movie. Like, oh, mm-hmm. there's like this fucking psycho hitman hunting mm-hmm. us down and going to kill Abigail. We need to like get out and protect her. And then when you actually, you know, people watch the movie, it's a complete 180. And instead, it's like Abigail is Valdez. She is the infamous Valdez. She is the hitman. Oh, and she's a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like such an obvious move. And I'm really curious to why they did not do that.
Yeah, I'm curious as well. Because then, I mean, even then, like, they could have played up like the paranoia of it because they start thinking like, what if one of us is Val? Like, you know, they have all of that kind of stuff going on too. So it's like, I agree. It feels like they had like a very easy route to go that would have hidden more. I wonder though, since it is kind of part of Universal's like modern remake of their classic monster movies, I wonder if they were kind of like, you have to make it clear it's a vampire movie.
Yeah, you know, but it's not going to be in the same canon or vein as, you know, Nosferatu or Wolfman, you know. Yeah. I have more questions about the vampire aspect in general for later, but
okay.
I think you make up a great point, and I think that if this movie ends up kind of flatlining at the 30 million or 25 million mark, they will be asking, well, I would imagine they'd be asking those questions at the top of the food chain. Like, did we market this wrong? Should we have, you know, kind of taken a step back and concealed the twist of the movie, but we'll talk I guess later about that and kind of see what happens in the next couple of weeks with the Abigail. Rotten Tomato score, what do you think it is?
Oh wow, I know it was super high when the embargo lifted and the critics scores started coming out. I know it was like really high, and then I think it dropped a little bit. Critics, I want to say it's like 85.
Okay.
But I can't remember. It might have gone down more from the last time I saw it. And then audience, let's do 80. Let's just say 80. I don't know.
Okay. Critic score? 85%. Right on the money. Nice job.
I'm so smart.
I don't have a sound for that one. But
I'm a critic.
There we go. Nice
Thank
job.
You. That's the perfect sound for me, Spider-Man. Thank you.
audience score, you're off by 8%. It's actually 88%.
Oh, wow. They're really liking it.
They are enjoying it. Consensus reads, carrying a off well-worn vampire trope with balletic flourish. I despise their puns. I hate their puns in the consensus. It just irks me. Every time I see a pun in the Rotten Tomato consensus, I am seriously like,
oh, brother, this guy
so
stinks.
Funny.
Abigail dances around the familiarity of its premise with a game cast and slick style. I did read a few of the negative audience reviews.
Ooh, what are they
Here's
saying?
Here's what they say. This movie is trash. Even for the camp it's trying to be, just garbage.
Ugh.
This person says, literally one of the worst vampire movies I've ever seen.
All right. They haven't seen a lot of vampire movies.
You know, you've seen a lot of vampire movies and you love vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me and the listeners right now what you believe is kind of like the quote unquote worst vampire movie you've seen?
Vampire Academy. But it's so bad it's fun. Like, I'm having so much fun, but Vampire Academy is easily the worst.
I thought that was a show.
Oh, well, it's a book series.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking about.
And then they tried to turn it into, this came out during the, like, big YA boom. So, like, the intention was for it to be, you know, a series, like Hunger Games or Divergent or any of those. But it had the one come out, it didn't do well, and they scrapped it. I don't love, there's this one, I think it's from the 80s, called Once Bitten, and it has Jim Carrey as the lead. That is not aged well, in my opinion. I'm not a fan of that one.
Isn't there something called like Cirque du Freak? Is that a vampire story of some sort?
I think it is. I haven't seen that one yet. I'm curious.
It's like John C. Reilly's in it or something.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many that I still have to see, which is really fun for me because it's like, oh my God, yum, vampires. But yeah, Vampire Academy and Once Bitten are the bottom of the barrel. Do you have like a, this is the worst vampire movie of all time?
I have no idea. I could not tell you what vampire movie is the worst. I haven't seen that much vampire movies. I mean, I've seen like the big ones, but not even all the big ones, to be honest.
Mm.
I've seen that Cirque du Freak movie. When it came. No. Oh. I don't know if it was a vampire. I can't remember. I think it was.
You said that so vehemently. Like, no.
No. Well, because here, I'm looking up Cirque du Freak. Cirque du Freak, The Vampire's Assistant. That's what it's called. So clearly, it is a vampire movie.
Yes.
It was a really popular book series that my younger sister was into. And so I was like, always like, what is this? And then I watched the movie and I was like, this is what you're reading? This is stupid.
That's so
real. That maybe is lower tier for me, but I would never say the words Abigail is the worst movie vampire movie I've ever seen. That's a wild, wild take.
Definitely not.
Another audience review said lots of scary stuff, but overall a really stupid plot. Someone said too violent.
Details
about movie was not detailed of movie substance. I don't know what that means.
Oh, I think they're saying the like IMDb summary and the fact that it doesn't explicitly say like this is a mob boss daughter vampire.
Oh.
He's also a hit. Like they're saying that the plot didn't warn me it was going to be as violent as it was.
Oh well, yeah. Too bad. the last one I wrote down says probably one of the dumbest movies. I do not remember wasting my money on a movie in over 10 years. Honestly, don't even recall the last movie as bad as this one. It is somewhat funny, but don't waste your time and money.
It always cracks me up when people are like, I don't know, I know when people don't like something, like the gut reaction is like, this was a waste of time. This was a waste of money because I didn't have a great time. But it's like, there's still value in having bad experiences.
Now
you know you don't like this version of horror. Like you've learned something. Like that's good.
It's really interesting. These reviews just remind me that like this person probably goes to movies like once every 3 months.
That's a good point though. I'm sure that is a big part of where people come from, where like they're not going to the movies as much as you and I are going. And it's more of a big deal.
Exactly. It's like I took time out of my day to go to the movies this one time in the last 3 months. And so I didn't have a good time. Thus, I'm going to take it out by giving this movie a half a star.
Damn.
So anyways, that's kind of the general idea of what audiences are giving this movie or why they're giving it a bad review. Hmm. But, you know, 88%, great audience score. Most of them are really enjoying it, which kind of leads me to the next question. And getting into Abigail itself, what works for you? What about Abigail worked for you the most? You walked out of that theater, you liked it. What was it about the movie you liked?
For me, I think the thing I like the most is that it is doing like the immortal child vampire route. We don't have a lot of movies like that. Like we have this now. We have Interview with a Vampire, which I love. And then we have Let the Right One In, which I'm also a huge fan of. And I'm sure there are more, obviously, out there of vampire movies with like child aged vampires, but those are just the couple that are popping in my brain right away. But that's definitely like an underutilized space, I would argue, like having childlike vampires, because it is like a, like I think there is something more scary about it in a way compared to like just a typical vampire, and like how like they're young but they're not, and like the added frustrations of being centuries old but you're stuck in the body of like a little kid, like that's maddening. And I think that's really interesting. So I like that aspect of it. I like the way they kind of try and explore, I think they don't do it enough, but I do think I like how they explore this idea of the relationship between like the maker and the maid of vampires, and like how over time those relationships become really fraught, but they can't like get away from each other, you know, because like they're intertwined in a very intimate way.
Mm-hmm.
So like obviously I'm eating up the vampire lore a lot. I like that they like kind of play on the tropes of like, oh, if you put garlic near her and like, oh, like this will help, like the trial and error of like trying to kill a vampire, I thought was really fun. I liked that a lot. And the cast is great. Like it's such a good ensemble. Like everyone is doing a really good job.
Yeah.
So those are my things. Do you have like a big thing that you liked the most about it?
I'm kind of in line with a lot of things you said. I love the cast. Mm-hmm. The ensemble cast is really fun. It's kind of a great like hodgepodge of who's who in like the horror world, but also like just in like who's big right now in like the just contemporary movies. And I wouldn't say that anybody here is like a bona fide movie star. Like there's no like Zendayas or Sydney Sweeney's or Tom Holland or Chalamet's in this movie, but like you just have like a really solid cast of like really great actors. Melissa Barrera and Dan Stevens and Catherine Newton and Kevin Durand and Giancarlo Esposito, even though he's only in the movie for a little bit. Angus Cloud, I mean, I went over the whole cast already, but everybody I think is like incredibly just talented actors. And so when you get these people all in the same room, you get some of like the most fun and exciting moments. I love all of their chemistry. Dan Stevens like just can't do wrong in my book at this point. Like even I thought he was like the best part of Kong X Godzilla.
Easily. Yeah. Oh my God, easily.
And we both saw Cuckoo, which you know, I'm not going to spoil Cuckoo for anybody, but I thought he was one of the best parts of Cuckoo besides Hunter herself. But like he's like holding his own. Dan Stevens is just like on a roll. And I think he's great in this. Melissa Barrera obviously is amazing in this. Catherine Newton is kind of like this also contemporary scream queen as of late. There's been a lot of horror. She's great. So I love the cast. Big fan of that. I think most people will be going and either it's for the horror aspect or they're going because they love the cast as well. And they won't be disappointed with the cast, I don't think. The surprise for me was how much I end up loving Kevin Durand as Pierre. He plays like the muscle of the group, the big guy. And I'm curious if there's anybody specifically in the cast that surprised you.
I think it might be him for me as well. Like he really did kind of like steal the show a little bit.
He does. He's funny.
I really cared about him.
I know. I was so bummed when he died. I was like, maybe he'll survive towards the end.
I know. I was so hopeful. I mean, his death sequence is so fucking cool. So I'm like, this is fine. But I was like, oh man, like, damn, that's a bummer.
I agree.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. Alicia Wehr is insanely good.
She's great. She
blew me away because like that was my first thing I've seen of hers. Like I haven't seen the newer Matilda.
That's right. I was like, who is she also? She's in Matilda. She's very good in Matilda. Matilda.
Oh, okay. I knew you would be able to tell me if that was
any. No, she's very good in that. Yeah.
Okay, so like I was just like so blown away by her in this, and like I feel like she's like no problem holding her own like alongside some really like high caliber actors. Like I was jazzed. I'm really excited to see like if she continues in the industry and like what she does next, because like I think I'm seated for her.
I agree. Not surprised, but maybe I'm a little surprised that Giancarlo Esposito is not in this movie a lot.
Oh, really?
Well, I kind of feel like we've reached this point with Giancarlo where he's typecast as like the stoic mob boss or like stoic gang leader. And he's there to like be kind of frightening, but like very sophisticated. And then he just doesn't show up ever again. Like this is like a very common role he's been playing the last 10 years, it feels like. And I'm just like, get Giancarlo Esposito out of typecast jail, because he's an incredibly talented actor that is kind of just being shoved into these nothing roles. And not that he's bad in this movie, but he shows up in the beginning, shows up at the end, And that's it. But he plays that same like stoic, mob leader. And I'm just kind of getting over it. Am I wrong to feel that way?
No, I think that's fair. I think he has such a commanding screen presence. I think it's natural to like crave more of him in general, but maybe more of him in a different capacity as well, for sure.
Well, I'm thinking about him in like Do the Right Thing, which I know was like over 25 years ago at this point, but you know, he's like not playing this. No. He's been playing this role since Breaking Bad. Yeah. And I get it. Breaking Bad changed his entire career, and he's amazing in Breaking Bad. I'm afraid he's going to be playing these roles forever, and I'm just like, we need to get him to do something else. Like, get him back with Spike Lee so Spike Lee can like utilize him in a different way or something. I don't know.
Unless playing this role is his favorite thing in the whole wide world.
If that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, then, in that case, party go on,
for
dude. It, dude.
Party on, happy for you. I just think he's too talented to be stuck in one role. That's all. Mm-hmm. Other things I liked, I agree. I love the vampire lore, but I do agree as well in the sense that I wish there was more of that. Now, that movie, this movie would never be that movie, but no. I find that the idea of the child vampire so incredibly interesting, like you know, somebody stuck in the body of a child for centuries, you know, has grown mentally and spiritually, but still physically looks like a child is a really interesting trope in the vampire world. I always think of What We Do in the Shadows, the movie, where they're like going around town and they meet the two little girls.
And they hunt pedophiles. My God. Those are my girls. Those are my daughters.
I love them.
I'm their dad.
Very, very funny. You're right in that like we don't get a lot of that exploration. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the vampire expert here, but of what the movies I've seen, you've kind of listed off like the big ones that we do see. And that's why I think Interview with the Vampire works so well. It's like Kirsten Dunst is so good in that because they're exploring that idea really heavily.
And they do it even more in the show.
You
have to watch the show.
I'm never going to watch the show.
No, listen to me and Bobby. Bobby wants you to watch the show too. I'm speaking for Bobby right now. But
I know. The show is not a slight to any of you guys.
It's genuinely some of the best television I've seen in the last couple years. Like, it's so good.
We do not care.
No! Boo!
I do care. Clara, I'm trying to watch Fallout right now, and I still can't get past the second episode, and I like the show. Sitting down to watch it is impossible right now.
That's fair, but I think it would be different. I think it would be different if you put on Interview with the Vampire.
I just want to watch Challengers four more times.
There's hot sex. There's boy kissing in Interview with a Vampire. It'll be just like Challengers. It'll be just like Challengers, but bloodier. I think you will like it.
I think I would like it. That's the worst part. There's so many shows out there I know I would like if I just sat down and watched it. But
it's so well made.
I'm glad to hear the show is exploring that because I find that concept really interesting. So anyways,
it's really cool.
The vampire lore I love in this movie. I do wish there was more of that exploration, whether that be in the idea of the child vampire or in her relationship with her father, which I think is also very interesting, which we don't really get. And we get like sprinkles of it through conversations. Mm-hmm. And then we get that last moment at the end, which is, you know, fine for what it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, overall I had a good time with it. You know, I think we already started getting into it earlier about the use of dramatic irony in your marketing. I'll just kind of continue that conversation in that, like, I do find the first 40 minutes of this movie a struggle because I struggle watching these characters kind of fumble around trying to figure out, oh, who's killing these people? Who's killing us? And, you know, who's hunting us? And they're kind of going back and forth about Valdez and the paranoia that they experience, kind of, you know, questioning each other. You know, a big point of tension is that Melissa Barrera's character is questioning Dan Stevens' character. They constantly have this back and forth, like, you're trying to kill me. No, you're trying to kill me. Mm-hmm. That to me just like, it sadly doesn't work at any level because I know that neither of them are trying to kill each other. And it's really just Abigail as the vampire. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think like, wow, I would have really been invested in this if I didn't know that. And considering the amount of or how often we go to the movies, it would be impossible for me to avoid this trailer. Like I physically walked out of the theater every time it came on and stayed off Twitter, it's like impossible for us to avoid it. And I do struggle with like the first 40-ish minutes of the movie. And I'm curious to know if that affects you at all. I don't know. We've talked about it in the past, but I'm curious if it affected you for this movie.
In general, I'm a big fan of it. I think for me, I don't know if it was, it wasn't necessarily that I was like finding the beginning a slog because like I know what's coming and they don't. It was more, I think I just, sometimes I have a hard time with movies where like you're like you have all these people that don't know each other at all and they have to like very quickly like become acquainted and get on the same team, you know, like the setup for those is a little like it drags for me a little bit. So like the beginning of the movie is interesting and like watching them kidnap Abigail, but like all the little back and forth they're doing, it's like I'm a little bit like, okay, like I get it. Like we have to know, we need to meet these people properly and they need to meet each other. But that's what drags for me more than the like waiting for them to find out Abigail's a vampire. I think because it's not played straight, like there's definitely a lot of comedy in their panic, I would say. And so I think that's what saves that part of it for me is that like it's humorous. So like and then it feels like I'm just in on the joke already, which is kind of nice. But I get where you're coming from with it for sure. Like it can definitely be especially because it like I mean it does take a long time for them to fully get the full picture. Like they take their time with that.
I agree with you in the sense that the comedy aspect, when they're not kind of arguing back and forth about who's the killer or trying to figure out what's happening, I am enjoying the comedic aspect to it. I really like that scene in the beginning where Melissa Barrera is kind of like pointing out everybody's backstory. She's like, I can read anybody. And she kind of goes through every single one of them and kind of hits it on the head perfectly. Love that moment. I love all the moments with Angus Cloud.
Yeah.
I think he's incredibly so funny in this movie.
Yeah.
And I enjoy him just kind of riding the tricycle around the house and just kind of being willy-nilly with it all. Really enjoy that. But as like the tension is supposed to heighten and get stronger, I don't feel it because I know Abigail is a vampire. So every time they go in to go check on her and she's safe, they're like, oh, it's not Abigail. Who could it be? I'm like, it's Abigail. We know. Let's get going, guys. Once we know it's Abigail, and once they know it's Abigail, I think the movie ramps up in a really fun way. It kind of becomes the movie I expected it to be, which leads me to a question I wanted to ask you. This is, you know, a Radio Silence project. For those who don't know, Radio Silence is essentially a production. Is it an actual studio now?
Ooh, it might be.
I think it is. I'm almost positive it is.
Should we Google it?
Yeah, let's Google it. Radio Silence
Movie Production. Of the internet.
The power of the internet. Oh, you look at Radio Silence Productions is an American film and television production company founded in 2011 by Matt Bettinelli Olpin, Tyler Gillette, and Justin Martinez, and Chad Villela. The directors of this movie, Matt Bettinelli and Olpin, and Tyler Gillette. So they go by Radio Silence often. Once we get the reveal that Abigail is the vampire, the movie becomes exactly what you expect from the Radio Silence production crew. Is that bad or good, though? I mean, I love Ready or Not. I'm a big Ready or Not fan, and I like Scream 6. But I'm curious if this type of horror comedy, this like almost very specific, like you can just tell this is a Radio Silence production movie. Does it get old? Will it get old? Does it get old in Abigail? I'm really curious to know how you feel about this.
Well, so this is, I'm glad you're asking this because I had a very like, whoa moment coming out of Abigail because a lot of my mutuals were mentioning that. And I was like, oh, I didn't think about Ready or Not at all.
Oh, really?
Not at all. But I think that's just, I'm such a vampire.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
That is exactly what I felt like. I was like, wait, what are we talking about right now? Like, I got really confused, but I think it's just because I'm such a vampire guy. Like, I'm just, I'm like, this is it's vampires. So I'm like, while I'm watching it, I'm thinking probably more about other vampire movies, honestly, rather than like Ready or Not. I think the only moment where I was like, I had a moment of like, oh yeah, is like when they show the vampires getting a stake through their hearts and they explode.
I was gonna say, yeah.
The way they do that is very well done, but it's very it's like a signature for them almost. Exactly. And so I definitely like had a flicker of it there, and I thought maybe that's just what everyone was meaning, was they just meant when the people explode it's like Ready or Not, but I don't think that is what they meant.
I mean I don't know what other people are meaning by it, but for me, it definitely is the exploding people in, and Abigail is the most obvious callback to Ready or Not. And I think you're right in that it is very much their signature style of kind of killing off people. I would not be surprised if in future productions of Radio Silence movies, we get that continuous trend. And that's like their signature way of dealing with conflict or enemies or people. I think just like almost like a visual level, just the way the movie looks and the way it's shot, the way like its color palette, it just feels exactly like Ready or Not. Like when I'm looking at it, I feel like I'm looking at the same movie. And I think, you know, when you go down to the premise, Ready or Not is about a young woman who is trapped in this big mansion who has to fight her way out. And Abigail, in a very similar way, is about this group of people stuck in this big mansion, specifically about Melissa Barrera in this mansion, and they must fight their way out. I think foundationally they share that.
Okay.
And yeah. I don't mind that. You know, I people love this type of horror comedy.
Yeah.
I'm just very curious to how long they can keep this up without people saying, all right, I'm tired of this now. That is my real concern at this point.
Yeah, I think that's valid. I think I am curious. I mean, I've only seen the Screams and then Ready or Not and then this from them. I haven't seen any of their VHS stuff. Are they what are those like? Are they similar? I mean, probably not, because those are anthology, but
VHS 85 I saw last year. I did not like it.
Oh, okay.
But it is very different because it's found footage, one, and two, each segment is directed by someone different, and so they have their own style. Some are better, some are worse. So that's you don't really get that that oozing Radio Silence aesthetic or like that even premise.
Gotcha.
According to this wiki, they are directing a sequel to Escape from New York, which is a John Carpenter film.
Oh.
Which is certainly a choice. And I don't, I mean, I love Escape from New York. Sydney, I know, loves it as well. We just talked about it on the Patreon like yesterday.
Oh, perfect.
No, you were there too.
Oh,
you,
yeah. Oh,
you said
I was?
You didn't see it though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did. Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, it was like we didn't like talk about it. It just like briefly came up.
It got brought up. Okay.
It got brought up. Anyways,
I remember that.
That's a movie that will challenge them though to actually step outside the, you know, confined space of a mansion being hunted down. I mean, that's a movie that takes place. It is in a sense about a guy stuck in a city that he must escape. So I mean, like,
so it'll
like,
be more like Scream, the Screams they've done.
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, it also has shades of Ready or Not and Abigail in the sense that like he is confined to an island. Like the big thing about Escape from New York is he's like on the island of New York and has to then escape like this town of, you know, crazy people. You know, it's a anarchy there. So, you know, there's shades of it in the sense that you have like this stuck in one location type thing.
Okay.
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, that's far off. I'm sure that's going to be like a 2026 release anyways. To go back to Abigail, it was a big part that didn't work for me. I'm curious how you feel about the ending. For those who don't remember, or maybe you want to know, or you want it spoiled for you, here's how the ending works.
Okay.
Dan Stevens becomes a vampire. He is bitten by Giancarlo Esposito, who also was bitten by Abigail, I believe. I think that's what the reveal is. Abigail, like, found out he was scheming with Dan Stevens.
He was working, yes.
And so she turned him, and now Dan Stevens is like, I will turn you, Dan Stevens, and in return, you must help me kill Abigail, and then we'll kill Abigail's father, Lazar, right? Lazar?
That's what they're, that's what they know him as. But
yeah, the mob boss name.
We could also say Dracula.
Dracula, they're making sure, Dracula.
we could stop tiptoeing around
it. Yeah, we'll tiptoe around it. They say, we'll kill Abigail, then we'll kill Dracula, and then we'll take over the underworld of the crime world and rule the world. I don't know what their plan is, something like that.
Yeah.
Like Pinky and the Brain. Dan Stevens then takes the stake and kills Giancarlo Esposito and is like, nah, fuck that. I'm going to do things my own way. Which then obviously causes Esposito to explode, blood going everywhere. You get a really cool, I think, very overt homage to Near Dark in that moment. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but the moment where like his face is covered in blood and he's wearing sunglasses.
Yeah. And he's smiling.
And he's smiling. I was like, dude, that's fucking, that has to be a Near Dark, like, just like tip a hat to that.
It's gotta be.
It has to be. It has to be. It's too iconic for it not to be, in my opinion.
No, yeah. Dan
Stevens then tries to kill Abigail. He like sort of does. She like gets incapacitated for a second. He hunts down Melissa Brera. They have a fight. He's like kicking her ass. Abigail shows up again and's like, hey, Melissa Brera, what if we teamed up and I'll let you live and we'll kill Dan Stevens, vampire? And they're like, yeah, let's team up. And then they team up and they're successful in killing Dan Stevens, the vampire. I'm really curious to know how you reacted to that, because I, not that I dislike it, but for a movie that felt so creative up until that point, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about like the default power of friendship being the way they win. And I don't know. I'm like still grappling with it, and I'm curious to know how you reacted.
Okay, well, first of all, it wasn't the power of the friendship. It was power of pinky promise. So I think we need to get that right.
My bad, my bad.
Raindrops on roses.
Why do you have that mapped?
No, because for our podcast, we talk about our favorite things. And that's...
Oh, wait, didn't I say... No, I didn't. I was something else.
Oops. Ignore that one, everybody. I'm keeping the podcast. Ignore that. That's for the Patreons. We hit that button when we talk about our favorite things. And clear. Anyways.
Okay. All right. What button were you going to try and hit?
I don't even know anymore. What did you even say? Oh, power of friendship.
Power of pinky promise.
Oh, power of pinky promise. I don't know what I was trying to even hit. I don't know.
I love that. It's a mystery. It doesn't matter. It's the power of the pinky promise, not the power of friendship, because they're not friends.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She just pinky...
I think I'll go for that one.
Okay, nice. Because she just pinky promised that she wouldn't let anyone hurt Abigail. Mm-hmm. So Abigail's like, you got to fulfill your pinky promise, sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I think if anything, I don't want Melissa Barrera's character to walk out. I don't want her to live. I think that's where I'm a little bit like, oh, man. Like, I kind of almost wish she died a little bit.
I'm torn in that, like, I either want Melissa Brera to live and Abigail die, or Abigail live and Melissa Brera die. I don't like that we get, essentially, a very happy ending for both of them. And that feels so antithetical to what the movie was doing the entire time.
I don't know, though. I would argue maybe Abigail's ending is potentially not as happy as it might seem, because I don't think necessarily Dracula is gonna like snap out of it,
be
really.
Like daddy number one after that,
be the companion that she clearly is craving and needing.
I guess I shouldn't use the word daddy, sorry everybody.
You're challenger pilled, you're fine.
I am challenger pilled. Also, it's not my fault that that word was twisted by Generation Z. So
it's been a thing way longer than that.
I don't agree with that. I think it's
I was absolutely hearing and saying daddy when I was talking about One Direction in like the 2010s.
No.
Like that was absolutely a thing.
Why are you pulling me?
Yeah.
Okay, well, did I interrupt you?
No, you're fine.
You'd be super dad, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, continue after that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessary. It's like that tricky thing of, and like, I mean, Melissa Barrera is so hurt. So I think you could almost kind of suspect, like, is she even going to make it to the fucking hospital? She got impaled through the chest. And she got tossed around like a rag doll. Like, she probably has so many
internal injuries.
Yeah. I don't know if she'll be able to get to the hospital in time. It's one of those things where it's like,
You know what place she needs to go to if she wants to live?
Seattle Grace
Hospital.
Yeah.
Main hospital in the hit TV show Grey's Anatomy, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where if you're impaled by a pole, you're stuck in cement, you can live.
They will save you.
They will save you.
Not Dr. if you're holding Shepherd, a bomb, though.
Head of neuro. Dr. Sloan, head of plastics.
Mm-hmm. Burke is head of cardio.
Burke.
Not anymore. These are all outdated, everyone. We're rewatching. So
I'm on season five.
We're in the golden years of Grey's Anatomy.
I'm getting to the O'Malley death. It's like I'm on the cusp. I'm on the precipice of those episodes, and I am ready to turn the show off.
I was going to say, are you going to tap out or are you going to keep going?
I don't know.
I want you to keep going.
I really don't know. I really don't want to keep going.
I believe in you. I think
because
then
after that I have to deal with the shooting. There's like it's just too much trauma.
The shooting
is back to back.
So scary, but great television.
It's just too much. I hate the build up to the shooting because I know who the shooter is, and so like those episodes of watching him, you know, struggle with like trying to get someone to talk to him.
Yeah.
I can't. Anyways.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. Melissa Barrera wants to live. She's going to Seattle Grace. Okay. So, but I agree that like. Well, no, how about this? Do you agree that the ending is too happy, or are you fine with that? Or do you think it is even happy?
I don't think it's the happiest in the world. Like, I think there's still a lot of shit that's fucked up by the end. So it's like, yeah, they lived, but like, what does that mean? Like, where do you go from there? I think it would have made more sense for like Melissa Barrera to die as well. Like, I'm fine with Abigail living because I want all the vampires to live forever. I don't want them to die. They're my friends.
Secret third option? Melissa Barrera becomes a vampire?
I was kind of wondering about that. I almost was expecting that Abigail was going to like force her to be her companion and be like, I'll save you, but like that means you can't leave and you're with me forever.
Well, because Melissa Barrera is bitten by Dan Stevens.
Yeah, but he died.
He dies. Is that lore accurate? I don't know vampire lore. Okay.
Yeah. Because she hadn't gone through the whole process yet. Like, because the way you become a vampire is, like, they have to drink your blood, and then you have to drink their blood. That's
correct.
How it happens. And so she didn't drink Dan's blood.
No.
And so when he died, it's over. It's okay. And that's like, classic lore. Like, we see that Mina in the classic like Dracula Bram Stoker novel. Like, that is a part of it.
I almost thought what was going to happen was that Abigail was going to have to bite her in order to save her from like bleeding out from her injuries.
Yeah, I was thinking that's where I was going a little bit as well, because it's like, yeah, I don't think she should have been able to walk out of that building.
Yeah. I mean, but if that happens, I think I'm okay with it. It almost feels a little unsure of itself, a little like the people making this movie or writing this movie felt like, we have this like really great buildup to this finale, but now we have to kind of figure out how to end it. And this was, I don't know, it just feels like almost like an afterthought ending that I wasn't completely in love with. So
that's, I think I agree with you ultimately.
Okay. Is there ever a world where this movie is considered too gory?
I don't think so, but I really like gore.
Yeah, so do I.
I like when there's blood everywhere. I think it's so fun visually and is really cool. So I don't know if I'm the right person to ask.
Well, I mean, I think just if we're able to step out of our own bubble here for a second. Because there was a lot of conversation on the audience reviews that there was too much gore. And I'm really wondering where the line is for general population, general moviegoers, your casual movie watcher. Where is that line? Because if this is too much gore, then Ready or Not for sure was too much gore. But I'm really curious about that.
That is a good question. It's hard to say. I'm trying to like think. Like, I mean, we talked about this when we talked about Saw X last year.
Oh.
And like whether or not it was
Saw
too much gore.
Saw X is the other movie. I've been sorry I'm interrupting you. I apologize.
No, you're fine.
I've been trying to think for the last day and a half. We've had this conversation of trailers revealing a twist in the movie, in the trailer, and then we have to watch that twist unfold in the movie.
Was it Saw X?
Because we know
it
in Saw X.
We
know he gets tricked by those evil doctor nurses people trying to scam him.
Yes.
But in Saw X, we have to sit there and kind of watch him go through that.
Oh my
God. That was another movie where I was like, fuck, I really wish it would have been like not in the trailer. It would have been such a cool twist.
I totally forgot we talked about that.
I knew we did. I could not think of the movie. I feel so much better.
This is why we're besties.
This
we're
is
getting
awesome.
There eventually.
Saw X, another movie like that.
That was. I think that's the reason I thought, because Kelsey didn't see that with you, right? Because it was so...
too gory.
Yeah, too gory.
But I don't know if it's the gore or if it's the fact that like she doesn't like to watch people be tortured or like the idea of watching somebody endure that pain
and
is
know
almost
it's
too
coming.
Much. Exactly.
But
and I
could
think
you
that's
argue...
a difference, yeah.
Would you argue then that this is a little bit of that though? Because like they're trapped in a house and they know there's something coming for them?
To an extent, yeah. You know, there is that constant tension in the air that someone is hunting them. And at any moment, any corner they turn, someone can get killed and die. There were a couple of times in this movie where I thought, you know, like there's a moment where Abigail, they kind of syringe her with, I don't know, fucking sleeping juice. What do you call that?
Night-night time
syringe. I don't know. They inject her with something to make her go to sleep and sedate her. They sedate her. Let's see, is that word? Come on, okay, Grey's Anatomy here. We know.
Yeah, we're
someone sedate me.
God, I love Christina Yang so much. Okay, keep going. We can't talk about Grey's more.
So yeah, they sedate her, and as they when they sedate her, Catherine Newton's kind of standing over her body, just like staring at her. And that whole time, it's a great scene because the tension's there. You don't know if it's going to work. And like, I was expecting Abigail just to wake right back up and like kill somebody. And she doesn't. But that is one of those moments where like the tension is pretty palpable. And I think people like that. I think there is a difference between that kind of tension and like someone strapped to a chair as like a saw, a buzzsaw is kind of approaching their face.
Because they have more mobility.
The mobility, I think like you can, there's a level of expectation. When you don't know what's going to happen, there is obviously tension in the air, but it's almost less scary than knowing a buzzsaw is going to approach this person's face and you know it's going to happen. It's like, do I want to watch someone's face get, you know, cut in half? And that's like a little bit of a more, it's a different type of tension, I think.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
That's kind of how I feel about it anyways, but I don't know. Overall though, the gore, I don't think is too much. And I don't, if this is too much for a casual moviegoer, I don't know where the line's at.
I don't know though, because like certain, I mean, Angus Cloud gets decapitated.
True, and like, this is very true.
And they show like his like the like where his head should be pretty like full on for like a good few seconds. So like you do see, I mean, that's pretty graphic. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the exploding guts is like. In my head, I'm just like, okay, it's just raining blood. But I'm sure for like the average person, that can be really jarring too. Like seeing the guts go everywhere, like that must be scary.
That's I'm glad you're bringing that up because those moments to me are more comical than they are scary.
I agree.
But I do wonder if there is a certain sector of people who believe, who think that is scary.
Well, yeah, because I think I do think the average person is like. At least disquieted by blood and gore. I think it makes, like, you know, it gives you that squirmy feeling in your tummy. Like, so I think something like that extreme can be pretty, I feel like that would be pretty jarring for someone if they don't know, like, that it's coming.
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Is it bad that this movie isn't scary?
They jump scared. It got me, I got a jump, it's jump scared me.
When?
Which usually never happens.
I mean, I'm sure it got me once. I'm a jumper, as you know.
You are. it's when Catherine, it's like after they've kind of all split up, but they're chilling, like nothing's wrong yet. And Catherine Newton goes in that one bedroom to watch cartoons and she sits down on the bed. And Angus Cloud is like hiding in the shadows and then like flicks a light on and he's wearing like a fucking mask. That scared the shit out of me. I was like taken aback because usually I can tell when a jump scare is coming. But that one got me.
Fair enough. I think that got me as well.
But yeah, overall, I mean, no, I think it's good sometimes to have horror movies that aren't like Talk to Me or Hereditary. Like, you know, just like those stuff that really, really can upset you because it's so scary. I think it's good to have horror that... is in a different space than that. Like, I'm okay with that, honestly.
All right. That's a great answer.
Thank you. do you wish it was more scary?
No. I think you said it perfectly in that, like, selfishly, I want every horror movie I watch to be scary.
Mm,
but that's that can't be the case, and that shouldn't be the case. I think you're completely right in that there are horror movies that are designed to upset you and to scare you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfectly fine to have horror movies that are more lighthearted, that kind of venture into the comedic realm, that are still, you know, exciting and fun and tense, but they aren't necessarily scary. I think that's perfectly fine. I think that this brand of horror comedy, if not done right, just can feel cheap, and that's where I get frustrated.
Okay.
I don't feel that way about this movie, but overall, I think you said it right in that, like, it doesn't need to be this, you know, super scary movie either.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Last question I want to ask you.
Okay.
Do you prefer this, or do you prefer Ready or Not?
Ooh.
When's the last time you watched Ready or Not?
Oh God. It might have been when it came out.
Ooh, it's not that long ago. It's like, what, 2019?
That's like 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah,
I've seen a lot of movies since
then. This is true.
Let me check. Okay. I'm checking. I logged it on Letterboxd, so at least December 2019.
Wow. I only have watched it, you know, I'm like giving you shit for not watching it, but I would not have watched it if it wasn't for the Patreon side of the podcast. So I watched it because of that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You did the edit for the trailer.
Oh yeah.
Final Girl month. We did a bunch of movies on Final Girls.
I knew that. I think I just didn't compute that you like hadn't seen it in forever.
Oh yeah. No, okay. Yeah. I mean, I haven't turned it on since the podcast, which was, you know, a couple months ago. But since I've recently revisited it, I still think that movie holds up pretty well. I was a really big fan of it the second time around.
Nice.
And yeah, end of the day, I like it more. It feels more fresh in a way. And maybe that's just like the consequence of it being an earlier Radio Silence production, so I'm not as familiar with their style. But I do prefer it at the end of the day. How about you?
I think I do prefer it, but I also do want to note, I'm looking at my Letterboxd review for this. I watched this on an airplane. I've only ever seen Ready or Not on my phone in an airplane. So
what do you mean?
We can just add it to the list of like insane things I'm watching on an airplane. Like,
that is wild. That is so wild.
But I think I would agree with you. I think the difference is in Ready or Not, you kind of only have the one character you're rooting for like the entirety of the film. Whereas like with Abigail, you're starting with a larger pool, and then you're kind of having to like recalibrate who's left to root for. And I think that's not as fun for me in a way.
I think that's really well said. I think recently, a lot of big movies tend to assume, oh, if we get seven big actors, it's going to be a hit. People are going to love this movie.
Yeah.
But I think if it's not written to support that ensemble, like I think a good example is Asteroid City, where you get this huge ensemble cast, but because the way it's written, you know, everybody provides something different to that movie. But you get other ensemble casts, you know, where, I don't know, like Don't Look Up or something like that. It's a harder movie to like, I don't really vibe with that movie, but it is a movie where the ensemble cast could be like a detriment. Or, you know what, another one? Did you ever see Bullet Train?
No, I still need to watch it.
Yeah, it's fine. Some people love it, and that's cool. Yeah. You know, it's a fun little action romp, but it's a movie that like really kind of pushes like, oh, look at all these cool characters we have. But I think part of its downfall is that it's just too many, and so the movie's so confused on what it wants to focus on.
Okay.
And you know, you can't go into the backstory of everybody. You know, you can't do a flashback for everyone. And the movie tries.
Oh God. Okay.
So, anyways, I think the ensemble in the right hands is a great movie. You make a good point that it's easy to root for, you know, Samara Weaving, Ready or Not, because it's just her. Yeah, good point. Okay.
Thank you.
We're getting towards the end. Anything we haven't talked about you want to talk about real quickly?
I wanted to ask you to rank Universal's like modern
remakes
they've been doing. Yeah, because they've got The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
We have Abigail. We have Renfield.
That's a remake too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's like
a loose remake.
Yeah, because that's what they're doing right now, is they're doing singular remakes that don't, like, have continuity with one another and, like, are intended to be kind of, like, one-offs, and, like, the filmmakers have, like, full creative control and can kind of take it whatever direction they want.
Okay.
So I'm wondering how you would rank the three of them.
So Abigail, a loose remake of Dracula's Daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Renfield, a loose remake of something
Dracula.
Renfield. Dracula. And then The Invisible Man, which is a more truthful, honest. No, what's a good word to use here?
Authentic?
Authentic. Good word. Good
Thank
authentic
you.
Adaptation of The Invisible Man, just more modernized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is easy. This goes
great.
Renfield, Abigail, Invisible Man, for sure.
Wait, Renfield's the bottom?
Oh. Bottom, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
was your?
I was floored. I was like, Invisible Man on the bottom.
Clara right now is like. No, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm going from bottom to top. Renfield is on the bottom.
Okay.
Abigail in the middle.
Okay.
Invisible Man on top. Wow, your silence makes so much more sense right now. So sorry about that, everybody.
No, you're totally. I was like, whoa, okay. that's so
yeah,
funny.
Yeah. That's easy. One, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, that's where I think I'm landing as well. I was curious. I mean, I had a little tougher time with... I liked Renfield.
I don't hate Renfield, though. Yeah, no. I know some people really didn't like that movie.
Oh.
And that's fine. I don't think it's, like, amazing, but I think it's more fun than a lot of people give it credit.
Super fun.
But Abigail is better than that. And Invisible Man, I'm still sitting here screaming from the mountaintops, is one of our best, like, modern horror remakes in a long time.
I agree with that. I love Invisible Man.
So that's good.
God, I want to. Do you want to? That's a movie I wish would get put back in theaters.
It deserves it because it was an early pandemic. It was like one of the five movies that came out right before the shutdown that just got really kind of axed by that.
I missed
by COVID. And I saw it in theaters, very fortunately.
How was it?
It was a great time, man. When that moment where the Invisible Man kills her sister at the restaurant.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I've had such an audible, like, gasp in a theater ever before. That was,
oh, my God.
Chilling, shocking moment. Love that movie. Sorry if I spoiled it for you, but it's now 4 years old.
Okay. Well, that's all right. Okay, so perfect ranking. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you in relation to, like, the classic monster movies, because, like, we're in that space. Out of these guys, who would you rather have as your dad? Would you rather have Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, or the Invisible Man as your dad?
Not the Invisible Man.
Okay.
Wolfman, Frankenstein, and Dracula. Am I a vampire if I'm Dracula's son?
You can decide.
If I'm a vampire, I choose Dracula.
Okay.
If
you're not a vampire...
Wolfman.
See, I was thinking Wolfman too, because I feel like he'd probably be the most, like, present.
Like, well, not only present, but, like, you can kind of plan around full moons, you know? And be able to avoid, you know, angry dad wolf.
Yeah.
That works for me.
Yeah.
Am I a werewolf if I'm Wolfman's son?
Oh, I mean, it's a possibility. He might bite you unintentionally when he's transforming.
Yeah. I don't know. What would you choose?
I think I would do the same. I think I would pick Wolfman if I, like, am just, like, a guy. But if I could be, like, a guy who's also a vampire, then I'm picking Dracula without question. I'll be a vampire for him. Like, I
Perfect.
Don't mind.
Okay. I wanted to ask you something. This might open up a whole can of worms for a conversation we may have to save for later, but I still want to ask it.
All right.
Like anything in life, trends exist, whether that be in fashion and music and movies and pop culture in general. Trends exist everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the vampire trend, which was very popular in the early era of Twilight, got a lot of vampire media. And then after that, I feel like it died down for a bit. People were like, well, let's take a step back from the vampires. We were a little, tired of them. They're everywhere. They're kind of ubiquitous in the world right now.
Skill issue.
Not for Clara, but for most people, they're like, let's take a step back from vampires. And we didn't get a lot of vampire media for, a stretch of time.
Mm-hmm.
Are we entering the vampire renaissance once again? Is that upon us?
I think, yeah, and in certain capacities for sure. I think it's a wider, like, we're in the monsterverse, like, across the board, which I think is really exciting. And, like, I mean, that speaks to the power of these, like, figures and their, like, who they are. Because, like, I mean, the monsterverse has kind of been revamped multiple times. It's in the 30s, it's in the 50s, it's later than that. It's kind of coming back right now in these modern remakes.
It's, like, its own trend.
Yeah, exactly. So I think so for sure. And I think, I mean, I think vampires in general, yeah, I mean, they're always, vampires are always going to be sexy. Like, there's just,
they will.
I mean, they're explicitly, like, sexually charged. There's, like, those sensations of desire that can be explored very, like, rabidly almost with vampire media. And I think people enjoy exploring those spaces. And so I think we're getting it for sure. Like, I mean, the Interview with the Vampire show is getting its second season soon, which is, like, a miracle for most TV shows to keep going at this point. So yeah, it's like,
really, seriously.
We're getting that. That'll be huge, I think. Like, there's all these. I mean, we've had, what is that, four big vampire movies in the last, like, 3 years. We've had The Invitation. Yeah. We've had... The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Call The Invitation a big vampire movie is...
It is a big vampire generous. Movie. No, it is a big vampire movie to me. I love The Invitation. But there's that. There's the Vampire on a Boat movie. There's Renfield. Like, yeah. And now we have Abigail this year. Like, we're getting a lot of
Nosferatu end this year.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Do you think, and I'm just opening the door even wider now...
Okay.
That as our culture becomes more conscious of, like, queerness in our world, vampire media is kind of, rising from the coffin and kind of reentering the conversation. Because, I mean, like you said earlier, vampires are just such a sexually charged figure. It's out of all the monsters, out of all the horror tropes, it's the one that can explore queerness the most naturally.
Yeah, well, I mean, they all do in their own right, because, like, the ideas behind all of them are this, like, the fear of the other, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, the Wolfman, I think, is read often as, like, queer as well sometimes, of, like, just that exploration of, like, oh my God, this figure has become other to us, and, like, that's so scary. So, yeah, I think it is becoming, like, really interesting. I mean, the big shift obviously is that it's no longer subtext. Like, Dracula's Daughter, perfect example. It's not like, I mean, that got censored when it was coming out. There were a lot of moments that, like, got cut out by the studio because it was too explicit. And now that's not a concern, right? Like, I mean, Interview with a Vampire again, like, we are seeing, like, them have sex. Like it is queer sex on screen, which is, like, really, really exciting.
Yeah.
I think it is a really cool time to see those things become more interwoven, like, just, like, this hunger to be who you are and, like not care what anyone thinks is, like, a very appealing, like, way to live your life. Obviously, it's the ideal way to live your life. And I think, vampire movies give you space to explore that in a very raw way. It's dope. I'm having a lot of fun, obviously.
Follow-up question.
Okay.
When is the zombie renaissance and resurgence? When is that going to happen? Because Walking Dead put us in a big kind of setback. They set back zombies for a while. Not intentionally, but it was just so ubiquitous, so everywhere and in your face. I feel like zombies kind of just, they went away for a bit. When are we getting that renaissance?
Aren't we kind of in it, though, with, like, The Last of Us?
Are we, though? Like, Last of Us, besides Last of Us, like, we're not, what's the last zombie movie you've seen?
Handling of the Undead at Sundance this year.
Oh, that's right. Which is, like, this year, though. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, a big, I mean, we were getting World War Z. We were getting, like, all these big movies.
Okay.
About zombies, but I can't remember the last, like, mainstream zombie movie we got. And maybe we are entering the early stages of the Renaissance with the 28 years later kind of announcement that's going to be happening, that movies will be happening in the next year or so.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll re-enter it, but I feel like...
Didn't Zack Snyder just do a big zombie movie for Netflix?
Oh, Army of Dead? Yeah. That was a movie. don't know if it's a good movie, but it was a movie.
I haven't watched it.
I looked at recent zombie movies right now. Let's see. 2023 Train to Busan, that was 2016.
God, that's a great movie. That had a sequel come out in...
Oh, Peninsula?
Yeah, Peninsula came out in like 2020, I think.
Warm Bodies, 2013.
Oh, God, that was a defining moment in my World
War Z,
experience.
2013. Like, man, we were in a zombie moment for a bit.
Yeah, we were.
Zombieland was like early 2010s as well.
Okay. And then that had a sequel come out a couple
in 2019.
Years ago.
Yeah, that's right. It was not good.
I thought it was fine. It's silly.
Yeah. Overlord, that was a zombie movie that didn't get a lot of love, but that was a cool movie.
Oh, that's on my watch list. I always mean to watch that. It looks so cool.
That was a cool movie. There's a couple here and there, but it's definitely not at, like, the Resident Evil movies are done now. We're not getting those anymore. I just want to enter a space or an era where we get really cool zombie movies again. That's all I'm asking for.
I mean, I'd be down. I think I don't notice the lack of it because, like, because
you play Last of Us every day of your life. That's why, Clara.
I do play The Last of Us.
That's why.
I play The Last of Us 2 specifically.
As somebody who doesn't play Last of Us 2 every day of their life, I want to see more zombie media.
Okay. But I was going to say, I think the other part of that, though, is like all the big YouTube people I watch who like do Let's Plays, like, if they're newer to the scene and they're up and coming, two of the games they always play really, really early on are The Last of Us series and The Walking Dead, Telltale.
Oh, Telltale.
Like those two, like those series are so foundational to like the gaming, like YouTube space now that it's like, I feel like I'm constantly seeing people play them for the first time. So I think it just is like, okay, like zombies are in. It's just people are going to the old stuff first.
Zombies haven't really left the video game space because, I mean, Resident Evil 4 Remake just came out last year, which I played immediately. I mean, I played it day of when it came
out. Yeah, I remember that.
So I just want more zombie movies. That's all I'm asking for.
That's fair. Maybe what we need, though, is maybe The Walking Dead needs to be put down all the way because they have like... They have like four spinoffs going right now.
Oh, I need to look it up because I have...
One with Rick Grimes was just in one and I got so many edits and the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, I don't understand what the show is about. Like, what are they doing?
Guess how many spinoffs. Can you guess the names of all of them?
There's Fear the Walking Dead.
Yep.
There's one in Paris.
With
Daryl.
Yep.
He got on a boat somehow and he floated to Paris.
What?
I'm pretty sure. I think he like got there in a rowboat. I don't know. I haven't watched it in a long time.
Okay. Good for you, Daryl.
There's
The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon.
Oh, that's what it's called.
Fear the Walking Dead. The Walking Dead.
There's the one that Rick Grimes is in right, like I think it's going on right now. I don't know what it's called, but I don't see any zombies in any of the clips I see. He's just running around. He's just being
there's
sad.
There's six spinoffs total.
Oh my God. I don't know their names.
So Fear the Walking Dead, you got.
Yeah.
The one you didn't get, but you're talking about Rick Grimes, is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live.
Okay.
The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's The Walking Dead and The Book of Carol.
Oh, okay.
There's The Walking Dead, Dead City.
Oh.
That one has Negan and Maggie in it.
Oh.
Arch enemies turned reluctant allies.
Yeah, I've seen clips of that one too.
What? How did that happen?
What do you mean?
This show is like, so confusing now.
Why are they together?
Yeah.
Don't tell me. I don't know. I was just going to make something up. I was going to lie.
Negan killed Glenn.
Spoiler.
Oh, I know. So why would Maggie? I would never hang out with that guy then.
That's the whole show, though, is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tales of the Walking Dead.
Okay.
And more tales from the Walking Dead universe.
Okay, all I know is none of those are giving me more Carl, so I'm not tuning in.
Yeah, Carl's dead.
Yeah, they killed him.
I don't know. Like, I know The Walking Dead was like a big draw for the graphic novel or the comic book was like it never ends, like it just continues forever. But that doesn't work for television, dude.
No, I mean, especially because the comics continued with Carl, and then they killed Carl because they didn't want to pay him adult wages. God. Such bullshit. But it's so funny. I tried to rewatch The Walking Dead after The Last of Us the season one of Last of Us ended last year, because I was like, ooh, I'm back into zombies. Like, let's watch more zombie stuff. And I watched one episode and I was like, I'm all done. I don't need to do this again.
Zombies.
But you want that. You
season
craving
four
it.
Of like Walking Dead. And then I was like, okay. Like a governor or something. I'm like, I'm done.
Oh yeah,
this.
The governor. Yeah.
I can't keep watching this show. I was over it. Anyways. Yeah. Before we end our podcast today on Abigail.
Okay.
What we've been meaning to do for the last fucking like four or three episodes is on Spotify, listeners, we always post a poll and a Q&A. That you can interact with on the Spotify app or Spotify website, and you know, vote in the poll and answer the Q&A question. And we will spend the last 5 to 10 minutes of the podcast reading your answers to the Q&A. So I'm making it a point to do a better job to go through those.
Yes.
Last episode, we talked about Civil War. The poll was give Civil War a score. And that's usually the poll for like these individual movie episodes is like give the movie a score. So 5, 4.5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or 0.5 or lower. Those are the options you have to choose from.
Okay.
Clara, can you guess, after 100 votes, what was the score, the major consensus?
I think I'm going to guess 3.
According to our Spotify poll, 50% of the votes went to 4.
Whoa. I mean, I'm there too.
22% went to 4.5.
Okay.
6% went to 5. 13% went to 3.
Okay.
4% went to 2. 2% went to 1, and 2% went to 0.5 or lower.
Wow.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Good
spread.
Good spread.
As good for soup. The good soup. I asked on the Spotify question Q&A, I said, what is your favorite Alex Garland directed or written movie?
Ooh.
Got a couple responses. George said Ex Machina. Jimmy said Ex Machina hands down.
Oh. Okay.
Ben said, I hate to be cliche, but I think it's Ex Machina.
Oh, wow.
It's a sci-fi masterpiece. Mm. Zach said, from the ones I've seen, Ex Machina.
Okay.
Neon Artist said, Ex Machina! With 2 exclamation points.
Nice.
Dare said Annihilation.
Hell yeah.
Good choice. Love Annihilation. Yeah. I love Ex Machina as well. To me, I'm not implying all those other Ex Machina choices are bad. Ex Machina is an excellent choice. Love Ex Machina. Siddharth chose Sunshine, and so did Sam. Also chose Sunshine.
Ooh,
good choices. Those are the ones we got. So I've done a very bad job telling people about these polls. So now that you're aware of it, there will be one for Abigail. I don't know what I'll ask. Maybe we'll ask what kind of Q&A question should I ask? What's your favorite
vampire movie?
Vampire movie. There you go. Easy peasy. Yes. Lemon squeezy.
Everyone's gonna say Twilight New Moon.
Breaking Dawn Part 2 is the right answer. But
the silence that you gave me after I said that was so funny.
Silence!
That's the one I really meant to push.
The Breaking Dawns are good too. I mean,
okay.
Any of them. Twilight time.
Twilight time. All right. So this is the end of the podcast. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this episode on Abigail. Please rate us and review us on Apple and Spotify if you get a chance. Check out the Patreon. We have a bunch of exclusive episodes on horror, animation, A24, random news episodes where
MCU.
We just talk. MCU. We're watching WandaVision in the month of May. May is also psychological horror month. A lot of stuff going on in May, so check that out if you get a chance. If not, don't worry, we always have free episodes available to you every week on Tuesday. Clara, final words, and what's your final score for Abigail on Letterboxd?
Oh wow, okay, final score, I give it a 3.5 and a heart. Feeling good about it.
What does the heart mean again?
What do you mean? what do you mean
the heart means I like it.
Okay.
I had fun, I had a good time, I like it. And my final word, we also have merch. We have merch.
We have merch.
I feel like we don't say that enough. We're shy about it.
But it, we shouldn't be because it rules.
It's cool merch.
Yeah. We had some people take photos like at a movie theater with it on. Yeah. And it was like the most heartwarming thing ever.
Yeah, it was sweet. So if you're interested in merch, you can go over to houseofcinemapod.com and we have merch.
There you go. Perfect.
That's my last word. What did you? What are you giving Abigail?
I gave Abigail a 3 out of 5.
Oh, okay. Letterboxd.
Still enjoyed it. And I mean, like I said, I had my issues.
3 is a good score.
3 is a good score. I think most people who are fan of horror will like Abigail. So if you're on the fence at any point, check it out. You know, it's a good. Yes. It's a movie that I think most people will enjoy. So
join us in the coven. Join the vampire coven.
Join the vampire coven. wait, isn't coven for witches though?
I think it's for both.
Oh, okay. Maybe join us in the coffin where we take naps.
That's their interview with a vampire of you to say.
Oh, okay. I would know because I've never watched it. All right, everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, night, week, and weekend, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.